All right, welcome back, everybody. Tobin and Leroy here with you, 560 WQAM. Take you guys up until 2 here on the program as Miami Dolphins wrap up day 11 of training camp today. Zach Sealer in the orange jersey, fresh off him getting that big old bag yesterday, showing up with his Aqua cowboy hat. That Zach Sealer, that baby Zach Sealer. Looks like he'd already get 5 sacks, Leroy.
Stole the show yesterday.
That's a big baby.
Baby Zach Sealer.
Telling you, man. That thing looks like he's already got a swim move down. He's already just mauling. He's already taking out all the other babies in nursery school.
You know, if they have another boy, it's going to be number roughhousing around the house like the Watts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Pretty wild. Let us get to our headlines brought to you by Doral Hyundai. At Doral Hyundai, choose the number one Hyundai store in the nation. They just went full beast mode. Doral Hyundai, where the deals are monstrous and the prices don't survive. No one sells for less. No one. So we got that getting to it. The Miami Dolphins today, Leroy, did not practice in pads. Zach Sealer had the orange jersey today, so that's what happens when you get the big contract.
Pretty much. Well, I think it has more to do with what he's doing on the field than how much money he's making, right? He seems like a hardworking guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The NFL, some of the news that's going around right now. J.J. McCarthy. He's going to play in the preseason opener for the Vikings. Of course, missed last year with a knee injury. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what he's got for Minnesota after their monster season last year. And then
that's pretty crazy that he only had a meniscus injury and they sat him the whole year.
Yeah, just decided not to have him compromised all year.
I don't know. I didn't know that meniscus injuries could be that serious. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought of the knee injuries, that was the, you know, the least one to recover from.
The Rams, they're dealing with an injury on their quarterback. A lot of quarterback injuries around the NFL.
You know what they, no. You know what injury they're dealing with?
Old
ass quarterback injury. You know, when your back goes as a quarterback, that's just old. You ever seen young guys have back problems with their quarterback?
No. It's always can't old. Say I have. Can't
it's always say old I have. From the torque and throwing the football.
The only young guy with a back injury I ever remember is Christian Yelich.
Yeah, but that's baseball.
That's baseball. I'm just saying that's the only young athlete I can think of.
Right.
Back injury issues. Sean Payton says Bo Nix is going to be a top 5 quarterback in 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
That seemed very dismissive.
It was, because that's what I expect my coach to say about a quarterback. Remember what Mike McDaniel said about Tua?
He said a lot of things about Tua.
Right.
Can't keep up.
All in confidence. All in giving him support.
Yeah, the confidence is a beautiful thing. Trying to be a harbinger of good energy, you know?
I will say there's a lot of young quarterbacks this year that I'm really excited to see. Right? Jackson Dart, Cam Ward.
Yep.
Who else drafted? Who else went? I want to see, I mean, even Shador. I'm not down on Shador. I just think that his skills is what got him drafted so late, but it doesn't mean he can't play, because we've seen a lot of guys who didn't have the measurables that ended up being great quarterbacks. So, well, everybody got disappointed about where he got drafted. Like, it still doesn't change, you know, whether you can play or not. You're the only one that can determine that.
No, and then you got to see, I mean, like Jaden Daniels, if he's going to continue to be amazing or if there's going to be.
I don't think he's going to have as good a year as he had last year.
You think it's going to be like CJ Stroud?
Not necessarily that, but it's going to look different because, like, keep in mind, with a game plan, everybody's going to come into the game saying, let's not let him do this, right? So you're going to see part of his game where everybody's going to make a conscious effort to stop it, whether it's keeping somebody near the line of scrimmage and he only runs for 200 yards instead of 600. But he may throw for 4,000 yards, right? Like, so you got to kind of, you know, the second year thing, you know, we looked at C.J. Stroud and said he had a second year slump when his offensive line was decimated. All his wide receivers were decimated. And so we just look at the quarterback. So there are a lot of things that go into it. The one thing that I would say that kind of helps you with that and would help like Tom Brady was they had a dominant defense. So he never had to go out there and throw for 5,000 yards early in his career.
And he's got this drama going on with McLaurin. We don't know where that's going to end up either.
Yeah. I mean, somebody made a very interesting point on TV. They said, quit trying to compare your number one to somebody else's number one, because those guys aren't come walking through this door.
Mm-hmm.
You have a number one. You got to pay him as a number one, not as a Jamar Chase. And so from that standpoint, the numbers get skewed because we immediately think that our guy's not as good as him. But what you're not looking at is this is our number one.
Yeah, and you would also think that this is the time where you don't, you know, you kind of have the play money because you're not going to pay Jaden Daniels for two more years at least.
Right.
So I don't know why you would, you know, mess around with that, because almost about the time, like, you probably give him, what, a three, because he's 29. So what, you give him a 3-4 year deal?
Yeah.
And by the time that's up, you're going to be probably, then that's when you got to pay Jaden.
What's amazing about this is people don't realize how old he is and how many okay quarterbacks he had success with. So
okay is putting it loosely.
While we sitting here talking about, oh, now he has Jaden Daniels, right? Forget this man was really good with guys who weren't as good as Jaden Daniels. So how much success is he going to have with a quarterback who's really good?
Pretty wild. So yesterday, Zach Sealer, he met with the media after getting that extension. And here's a little bit of what the Dolphins cowboy had to say. This was him on where things are with the team and Mike McDaniel and everybody being aligned together. Here's what a Sealer it on up.
The biggest thing we're focusing on as a team, which obviously comes from McDaniel's down, is making sure that we are attacking every day with deliberate technique and fundamentals, and to take that into game days on Sundays. And you don't go out there and you forget what got you there. You can get rattled, you can do whatever. It's to be able to lock in and hone in on that and get back to those moments. So it's creating those game-like situations at practice, creating the stress, the offense and the defense, the O-line, D-line specifically. That's where I'm at. That's what I see and do. And working each other's in those in uncomfortable situations so that when it appears on Sundays, you're ready for it. You've had those reps mentally and physically, and you're ready to go. And I think if we can hone in on that, we can have a – we're going to be a great team.
Yeah, sweet nothings, Leroy. You'd like to that's the guy you want to hear from on that stuff.
I think they've, for the most part, held up their side of the bargain defensively. And they're getting guys better, so they're going to get stronger and deeper.
They should, yeah.
I don't know what the secondary is going to look like, but if you can get pressure on the pass rusher, the secondary don't have to be great. I would say the biggest question right now is not even the talent on offense, but how the offense will be constructed going into this season. It's one thing to say you're going to be tougher. It's another thing to call a football game and play football on a week-to-week basis as a more physical football team. If you look at it, I'll give you a perfect example. If you look at what Dan Campbell tried to do when he was here,
mm-hmm.
right, as far as making guys tougher, look at what that looked like. When he went to Detroit and his whole attitude was making his team more physical, and now they are that physical. And they got banged up last year, and it kind of set them back. But there's never, like, the way you think about Detroit now is forever changed since the coach took over, right? And I think that's what I thought was coming here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I do believe that they're going to make a conscious effort to be physical, and they just need to be patient with it and stay with it.
We'll hear more from Zach Sealer coming on up. We're going to take a break. Should be joined by Michael Lombardi. We'll see if he's done with practice over there at UNC as they're in the midst of camp over there. We'll take a break. Back with more for this. All right, welcome back, everybody. Tobin and Leroy here with you, 560 WQAM. Take you guys up until 2 here on the program. Streaming live on YouTube and Twitch. Miami 560 WQAM is the handle there. And, of course, on your Odyssey, iHeart, Radio, and TuneIn apps, you guys can check us out there and subscribe wherever your podcasts are available. We're in the midst of Miami Dolphins training camp, the Miami Hurricanes getting set for their opener against Notre Dame. And we found out yesterday the Canes ranked 10th in the coaches poll. And we got on the guest line, the Toyota of Hollywood guest line. Shop over 2,000 Toyotas on sale at one location at Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan and toyotaofhollywood.com. He's got a book out on paperback, Football Done Right, Setting the Record Straight on the Coaches, Players, and History of the NFL. Michael Lombardi, who, of course, running the program at UNC there as well. Michael, thanks for the time. How are you?
Thank you. Appreciate it. It's good to be here. Appreciate you guys.
Did Leroy Horde, did my guy Leroy Horde, did he make the cut, Michael Lombardi? Do we have a chapter on Leroy Horde, his short yard situations or his shoulder pads?
We could. You know, Leroy's draft actually in Cleveland was a really good draft that paid dividends for the Ravens down the road. Rob Burnett, Anthony Pleasant, Leroy. It was a good draft, and certainly Leroy, the year we went to the playoffs in 1994, the last time I think the Browns for a long time won a playoff game, Leroy carried the team. We beat New England at the stadium, and Leroy was dynamic. So, yeah, Leroy, Bill and I were on the field the other day talking about a back that kind of reminded us of Leroy. So, you know, yep. Players never leave you. You know, you always are comparing them. You're watching them. You kind of remember. I the problem is I'm so old that I bring up players' names to the staff and they don't know who the hell I'm talking about. That's the tragedy.
It is funny. But, Mike, it's weird because I see you in this new role, but at, you know, a different level. But there are a lot of parallels in that you still have to identify talent and value of talent. And is it much harder at this level because they're so young and you've never seen them perform at a comparative level. So you never seen them play against players that are equal to them.
No question, Leroy. That's the challenge. The beauty of it is that if you're not able to draft a guy in the second round of the NFL, you lose out. Then you're stuck. In college, if you lose out on getting a kid from, you know, South Florida, you know, you can go to the panhandle and find another guy similar to him. But the evaluation part is the hardest. You know, when we first got here, Bill and I, everybody watches huddle tapes. Oh, have you seen my huddle tape? And it's the worst thing you could ever watch. It's a promotional tape. You know, the players put together their tape, and, you know, one play is a kickoff return, the next play is a tackle, the next play is a fumble recovery. Like, it makes no sense. So it's taken us a little bit of time to understand how to break down the high school tapes, but we're doing it, and I agree with you. It's hard. You just got to try to understand the conference they play in, and then as anything in the college draft, it's about level of comp.
Is it more limited than a salary cap? Because schools don't have access to the money.
Yeah, you can't use the sign-up bonus to spread. You can't use years. The problem is it's a year-to-year contract league, and that makes it hard. So you are going to get cap room. The other beautiful thing about this is there's no dead money. So it isn't like you got a bunch of dead money. You know, I cut this 6 players, and I got $5 million worth of dead money, right? You just move on. And so, look, University of Miami, I mean, they've got a lot of players. They're spending money. they're running their cap, doing what they have to do. It's no different than a pro team. And that's why this job is so much fun for me because, you know, Bill and I, when we talked about the college game this past fall, last year, you know, when he said to me, would you be interested in going to college? I said, yeah, it's a pro game. It's the same. And the difference is you have more availability. You know, as Nick Saban said, we don't have to listen to the draft. We can go find players.
So what was that buzz about the Canes over when the ACC media was all happening? You were gearing up. I know you guys don't got them on the regular season, Michael, but obviously they got a big year ahead. Like, do you keep your eye on guys in programs, even if you're not maybe going to face them in the regular season?
I mean, you certainly have to. You got to understand who the level of comp is, right? I think one of the mistakes we made in Cleveland with Leroy was we were so preoccupied with Denver. And we tried to beat Denver and John Elway. And that's all we talked about when Washington, Philly, and the Giants would go into Denver and just kick Denver's butt. Like, they had no problem beating Denver, the NFC East, when they were really good. And so I think you have to understand who's the competition. And certainly it's not always in your level. It's not always in your conference. Clemson's good. Miami's good. Florida State had a down year. So you're always going to watch those teams repeatedly. And I'm going to have them on my monitor every single week. But I think you have to understand what it takes to play at the highest level and find players that fit that level.
What did you, because Rhett Lashley kind of made some noise with the SEC folks over there, because nobody ever should ever say anything about the SEC. Did you agree going into your first year of this AC and seeing the talent around there? Do you feel like it's a conference that's a bit overlooked as far as the other ones are concerned?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, the Southeast Conference and the Big Ten have all the networks and that. But I think when you look at it, look, SMU went into Penn State and played as well as you could play in a very tough environment. They're a good program. Rhett's done a really good job. I think one thing about college that's pretty clear is if you understand how to manage games, if you understand how to give your team the best opportunity, emphasize the kicking game, you know, you can keep the games close. I mean, when you look at the ACC last year, there were very few routes. You know, nobody beat everybody. I mean, North Carolina won six games last year and easily could have won nine if they lost a lot of one-score games. So it's a fairly competitive environment, and I think in the Southeast Conference, that doesn't always hold the case.
Talking to Michael Lombardi, you guys can get his book, Football Done Right, Setting the Record Straight on Coaches, Players, and the History of the NFL, available in paperback now. Of course, had Leroy Horde, a wee lad in Cleveland.
Hey, is Bill smiling more?
You know,
is he enjoying it more?
I think he loves it. You know, somebody called me the other day and said that knows Bill and said, is he having as much fun as it seems like he's having? And I said, yeah, he loves it. Look, the beautiful thing about this thing here is we can run the program. I don't have some salary cap guy coming down telling me what I need to spend. Right. I don't have some owner's son telling me what we need to do. That's over with, you know. This is just really just football, and we get to run the program, and Bill gets to put his program in, which is great.
I think one of the most overlooked things in the NFL at the NFL level, and I've seen coaches that go to college, is exactly what you just said. It seems more about football and not about the other stuff. I remember when we were in Cleveland, nobody ever really talked about Belichick's ability to coach. And whether you liked Bill or didn't like him or some of his things, you were annoyed by some of the things he did, you knew you were as well prepared as you would ever be for a football game. And now you don't have to deal with all the interactions with all the people you talked about in the media. Because he had no personality, everybody took that as a negative.
Yeah, and so exactly. And they never realized what a great coach he is. I mean, it's like, you know, look, how many guys are great with the media? You know, I mean, if you're great with the media, you get a pass. I mean, poor Marty Schottenheimer, he can't get in the Hall of Fame. I wrote about it in Football Done Right. Marty Schottenheimer's won 200 regular season games in his career. There's only 8 other people on planet Earth that did that. And right. So, like, how do you not put him in the Hall of Fame when you're one of 8 out of 500 and some coaches? How do you not put that player in the Hall of Fame person? But he can't get a vote because everybody has an excuse. Well, he didn't win a big game. Well, Marv Levy didn't win a Super Bowl, and he's in. He was 0-4. Right. Bud Grant didn't win a Super Bowl. He's in. You know, I mean, so I think it's a little bit hypocritical. And I think guys like that, it becomes who is kind to the media. And that's why I wrote the book. And if you read the book, the last chapter, I explain why I wrote the book. It's a little bit like what Larry David talked about in one of his shows. I wanted to spark a conversation, the middler. I wanted somebody to come in and talk. And I think Sterling Sharp finally getting in the Hall of Fame explains why I wrote the book, because that was one of the key points of my book was Sterling Sharp belongs in the Hall of Fame, but because he only played 7 years, people said he couldn't. But, oh, by the way, Terrell Davis only played 6, but he's in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. Tony Boselli only played 10, but he's in the Hall of Fame. You know, there's just hypocritical rules.
That's why I'm boycotting all Hall of Fame activities until Metcalf gets in.
I mean, that guy returned 2 punts in the same game, won a Pittsburgh game. But he didn't have Devin Hesper. Devin Hesper's a great player. I'm not disputing that. But Metcalf was incredible in a lot of different areas.
Michael, what do you make of with the Dolphins down here? Like, we talk about coaches and development. Like, we're kind of interested in seeing this year if Mike McDaniel can get back or make his team more physical. Like, the idea that this team can change their identity from what they've been their few years. Do you feel like as a young coach going into his 4th year, is that something that's possible? Because it seems like the buzz from the players is better this year, but you don't really know until you get into it.
Yeah, I think you don't know until you get into it. I mean, Mike is who he is. You know, Bill Parcells had a great line. He says, when a player shows you who he is, believe him. And I think when a coach shows you who he is, believe him. Now, can he change? We'll see. I think it's important. But it's been that way forever. You know, I mean, look. He's been through 3 defensive coordinators. Is he going to, you know, he's on the second. So this is the first year he's actually stayed with the defensive coordinator. But I think it's a hard job to be a defensive coordinator for an offensive coach who just wants to run perfect plays.
Mike, I say it's a situation of overcoaching a situation, whereas he doesn't let his players go out on the field and compete, because running the football is all about competing in front. They usually know what you're going to run. And it's about a mindset of knowing that this is the time where we have to run the football. And he tries to avoid that by running all these, you know, quick passes and stuff like that. And I'm more shocked that in every other offense he's been associated with, he's never been that.
Yeah, it's amazing, right? He was a run game guru in San Francisco. And right. Yet now he comes there and all he wants to do is call pass plays. But here's the reality, though, and I think people miss this. You know, to be a head coach, you have to do what's in the best interest of how to win the game. You just can't run plays. People are preoccupied with that. The best head coaches are the ones that set up a game plan that win that specific game on that day. And if it needs to run 50 times, you run it 50. But you can't go into Buffalo in a playoff game and think you're going to throw it 40 times with the third-string quarterback and think you're going to win.
Michael Lombardi, go get his book now, Football Done Right, Setting the Record Straight on Coaches, Players, and the History of the NFL. I'm telling you, Michael, the next edition that comes out, we need a Leroy Horde chapter. How many the shoulder pads Leroy, are, the short always, yardage, because nothing would bring me more joy than that.
Nothing good. Always good to talk to you. Thank you, guys.
All righty.
There you go. Michael Lombardi joining us there on the program.
He's the man that gave me my first scolding.
gave you the old you were drafted.
He called me into the office and said, "Hey," he said, "buddy, look, sit down. What you doing ain't getting it done." He said, "I don't know what else to tell you." He said, "We invested a lot in you, and if we hadn't, you might not be here. But you better turn it around." And that was kind of an eye-opening moment. You know, it kind of stopped. You know, part of it was being 3-13 the year before. Sometimes when you lose so much, you kind of lose interest.
Right. So, and, like, so what was the issue? Like, were you? We joke about the fumbles thing. Was it like motor? Like, what the hell was? What was annoying you?
It wasn't that. It was just Bill was very big on seeing things in practice, right? And I was big on, I can't play football like I play on Sunday every day of the week. And so there's a happy medium there where you're getting work in that's preparing you for these games without playing the games, right? And so that was in your preparation in – your effort during practice and how you, you know, did your lifting and stuff like that. Like, take those things serious. And then the coaches would have faith that you're committed to this and now we can play you on Sunday. And it was kind of that thing. Like, I don't think anybody had any doubt of how I was going to play on Sunday. It was along the lines of, you didn't ever want to go in a game thinking, well, based on what he did this week, I hope he can do it.
We'll take a break here on the program. More to come here on the show. Back after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. It's Tobin and Leroy here with you, 560 WQAM. Take you guys up until 2 here on the program. Yesterday, De'Aaron Fox agreed to a 4-year, $229 million extension with the San Antonio Spurs. Made Heat fans furious because now there's no free agents available for 2026. I don't know why Heat fans thought De'Aaron Fox was going to not sign his extension with the Spurs. Like, I think there was this idea that because they have Stephon Castle and they ended up with the number 2 pick, that maybe there was a chance they were like, never mind, we don't want De'Aaron Fox. Like, I don't think that the Spurs are going to like, we're going to cross up Rich Paul like that. So I don't think that was going to happen. And I also, you know, I talked about this when this trade went down. Like, if the Heat were going to get in on the De'Aaron Fox thing, like, they should have probably done it last year. But I don't even know what a De'Aaron Fox, Bam Adebayo, Tyler Hero core, like, I don't know what that does.
So my question is this. When you're talking about adding a star player of that caliber, are we going to get away from the mid-range guy? And I say that not to discredit what he does, but when you build your team around defense and space, does that not clutter everything up?
Well, he's had trouble with the Kings with all the other guards that they have brought in, and it didn't work out as smoothly.
Right. So how would him and Tyler work out?
I think it would have been fine. Like, I don't think it's a non work, but I think that there's a problem in, can you have them as your 3 max guys and like, hey, this is a contender.
I mean, I don't think it's crazy considering there was Malik Monk, Bam Adebayo, and De'Aaron Fox at Kentucky all together.
Yeah, but college is a little different, though.
I mean, I get because it, but college, I feel like...
Because college, no matter... Keep in mind, Jordan was a star in college, but he wasn't Michael Jordan. Like, you play in a system. And even though you may be more talented than some of the other guys you're playing with, it's still a system that, you know, everybody... I mean, think about what they have. Jordan, James Worthy... you know, they had a lot of stars on that team that played in a system. In the NBA, you try to take your stars and separate them from everybody else so that they are the go-to guys. And I don't know, if you look around the league, if you can kind of have your go-to guy be a mid-range guy.
Well, it's also just like the investment that you have in that backcourt has to be right. Because, like, if you're talking about 2 small-ish guards and they're both going to be making – one's going to make $57 million a year.
Right.
And, by the way, everybody's clutching their pearls this weekend because Tyler Hero's – they're like, oh, he's going to ask for 40 a year. I'm going to tell you right now, I think if Tyler Hero only asked for 40 a year, and I know how crazy the NBA money is, I think that he would sign that extension with him. Like, I think people got to get that out of their minds. Like, Tyler Hero is going to ask for $50 million a year. And that's what he's – that's the range that he's going to be in. Right. And that's the question is, like, can you have your 2 backcourt guys be that big? Because I think what the Heat are looking at right now, when we talked about all these Heat builds, the build was Bam, Jimmy, and then what is the backcourt guy that you're going to trust? Because you couldn't trust Tyler because of his health. He was always getting hurt. And that's why they were always looking at these guys. And we were perusing the De'Aaron Foxes, the Damian Lillards, because you needed to have that reliable go-to backcourt scorer. And now it's kind of in the other issue of like, okay, now you need to figure out it's either going to have to be, you know, either some other unicorn power guy next to Bam or another guy on the wing right now. And that guy just doesn't exist. Like, I don't know who people think that that person is. The only supersonic guard that you would put max money into right now and that you're going to probably circle around in this whole whale chasing thing in years is probably going to be Ant-Man. And he's just into an extension where he's got four more years. So, yeah, I think the Heat fan does have to get to a little bit of this whole idea that they were selling you 2026. That was literally like, you know, if Luka Doncic and the Lakers botch Luka Doncic, like that's it. Everybody else, like, I don't know what people thought that that was going to be available, because right now the only guys are Trae Young and forget it. I think there's one other guy and you're just like, eh, I don't know.
I think that's like, yeah, that's a no for me. That's a no for me. Like, I'm not a Trae Young. I'm not saying he can't play. I'm saying in this system, right? In this system, how would that work?
I'm excited to see, though, you know, with them having the dynamic of him and Norman together, what that's going to do. Because Norman, man, that guy had a really good year last year.
Right. And now, he plays defense.
Yeah. And we're hopeful that he gets back to, you know, Toronto, Norman Powell. I can understand. You sit next to that traffic cone and James Harden, he lulls you in. By the way, have you seen James Harden in China?
He's been eating some ramen, huh?
I guess he's looking at that calendar. He goes, not September yet. Not exactly.
You know, I never blew up like that. You know why?
Was that?
I golfed in the offseason. I was out in the sun all day.
Dude, it's like, I mean, yeah, you're probably shredding it like crazy here.
Yeah.
Especially if it's hot like this. But it's, it's I think... Now, the question is going to be for the Heat on Tyler is like, you know, do they think that they're going to go in a direction where he's one of the guys? I don't know. You know, he's obviously going to have a great regular season. I have no reason to believe he's not going to be as good, if not better, than he was last year, especially with there not being any Jimmy, you know, changing of roles and not having to have Terry Rozier forced next to him for, you know, a couple of months. I do think that's going to be more prudent for Tyler, but you know, he's a little bit in that zone, kind of like Tua, where it's like, yeah, we know where he has to prove it. And that's going to determine where the Heat are at with this whole thing. But man, people were going nuts about that De'Aaron Fox thing yesterday. I was like, you guys had no shot in hell of getting him once he got traded to the Spurs. He wanted to go to the Spurs.
Right.
He wants to pair next to Wemby.
So you knew he was going to sign an extension there. It's not even
sure. That. Yeah. You're not, they weren't going to double cross Rich Paul either. Like that's a bad move on the Spurs point, you know, like you're not going to be like, oh yeah. We made this move happen here. And then, oh, sorry. We ended up with the number 2 overall pick. He's going to be like, all right, well, you don't have to pay him right now. What's the problem? All their guys are young. They're not paying anybody else. Right. The Heat are at the point where, you know, they paid Bam. They got to figure out what's going to happen with Tyler. And then now the question is like, all right, what does everybody else do with Wiggins being more comfortable? I saw Wiggins was in China on the Great Wall of China. And also, Khalil Ware was riding a camel.
Oh, my goodness. Was there speed dragging on the ground?
No, they weren't, which was quite surprising. I was like, man, they got some tall camels.
Yeah. No, I mean, camels are huge, massive animals.
They are huge. What are you
talking about?
I don't know, dude. I don't like. I don't recall how many camels I've been around in my life. I'm not really sure. See?
Would you ride a camel?
I don't know. They're kind of sneaky. You trust that thing? Look at that thing.
That, I don't, dude. Look. I don't know.
Makes that thing look like a horse.
Can I just say that camels look dumb as hell?
What?
That camel looks so dumb.
Why are you saying that? What, you don't know if that camel's unintelligent?
I don't. I didn't say that. I didn't say he was.
What makes them look stupid?
Just look at the head. Just the lip. He looks like he's just writing, my mama told me. I don't know.
My
palms start sweating. I was watching something on X. A guy catching a king cobra.
Oh, I think I saw that video the other day.
A bag in a tube.
Intangibles?
Yeah, he just like he's just tapping. Well, no, over there they treat snakes differently, right? So they're
So he's like a snake charmer.
No, it was just a snake that showed up in the hallway somewhere, giant one. I'm like, I would be out. Sell a house, we done.
The boy Dale, or the boy Dale, sorry. Figure out what to do with Tyler, question mark. Trade him for two picks or move into a team trying to take a leap. Yeah, I don't know what you guys think you're going to get for Tyler. Like, I don't, you know, that scoring guard thing that you're going to have to pay a boatload of money to, it's not exactly fetching a ton of assets. Now, I think Tyler could definitely get you a pick.
Yeah, that's the problem is that here's where I always go with all this. You want to trade Tyler, right?
Right.
Keep in mind, in all the other times that it was a possibility of Tyler getting traded, nobody really wanted him.
Right.
Or nobody really fully was willing to give the value that maybe the Heat wanted. And then you have to think of this. If you get rid of Tyler, who replaces Tyler?
Yep.
And so from that standpoint...
I mean, unless you're going to just say Norman Powell is going to be Tyler, which...
He's more of a two-guard, though, right?
Yeah, he is. I mean, yeah. they're very similar. I would say
How would you be at, like, I'm just thinking during the course of a season, seeing Davion and Powell in the game at the same time, mm-hmm. locking fools down.
That'd be awesome.
Right. Yeah. Which is something that this team has never really had.
But I'm with you. Like, what do you get for Tyler? Like, it's what, like, I'm right. like, because people say
and,
this.
And it's not us. It's not what we think the value of Tyler is. It's what the rest of the league or the guy, people who would trade for Tyler, what they think his value is. And keep in mind, you're going to have to give him $50
million. Right. And then, because people did this with Bam, too, over the summer when people were doing, not to name any names, Detonator wrote Bam Adebayo trade columns. But, like, I was looking at Bam, like, who trades for Bam? Like, San Antonio would for sure. Like,
he seems like a San Antonio.
I feel like that would be, like, the obvious place. But, like, what are the Heat getting back? Are they getting, so they're getting Harper and Castle back? Like, are they doing that?
Right.
It's, and then you've got to take on how much money he makes. So I do think look, the Heat are in a bit of, they're going to be in an easier East. They've definitely made themselves better with Norman Powell. And you need either Nico or Kalel to pop this year. And I think, yeah, maybe you'll have something because this East is not as formidable as it was last year because everybody's hurt. You know, we know who the teams are. Knicks, Cavs, maybe the Magic, maybe Detroit. Michael Beasley says the Heat are literally in the abyss. And Pat Riley did warn of that. He did say they were staring at the abyss, and now we're just in the abyss.
Yeah. I would just like 1 year where we're not talking about how many games Heat players missed.
For sure.
Just mm-hmm. 1 year. And then you can have a better assessment of what this team is and can be. The problem is in the last 4 years, have we ever had that?
Yeah. I mean, last year it was the other guys. It was the others, not Bam and Tyler, right. But everybody else.
Right.
Steve says, didn't Desmond Bane go for 4 first rounders? You're telling me Tyler can't get you 2? I mean, look, if he has an incredible year and somebody's like, yeah, we'll pay for that, then maybe. But Desmond Bane was already under contract, an expensive contract, but under contract. And he was kind of looked upon as they got their two bigs in Paolo and Franz Wagner. I just like saying his name.
Yeah.
Wagner twins. Sound unctuous? The Wagner twins.
I mean, they kind of sound like they're raising havoc in hell.
Mo Wagner is so annoying to play against.
Because there's one brother. That's always very talented as yes. far as skilled.
Yep.
And then there's the other one who's like a Bash brother.
Right. Robin right? Lopez, Brooke Lopez.
Yes.
The Morris twins.
Right.
Even Caleb Martin.
Yeah, but Caleb, I mean, Caleb ended up being more productive than his brother, and his brother was the, you know, the more sought after prospect.
So, like, yeah, I'm saying, Steve, you probably need to put it like in this, like, yeah, if there's another team that's like, man, we're one away. I just don't know who that is right now. Like, right. That's, you know, it's that's like Tyler's, it's kind of the dime a dozen position in the league that he does. I'm not saying that he's not great. He's great at what he does, but it's also like, it's not the 6'9 guy who can shoot and defend. It's, right. You know, the 6'5 guy who can shoot a lot of threes. A lot of people feel like they can fill that void somewhere. So that's
until
why
they
I don't.
Can't.
Yeah. That's why I don't know if it's going to fetch you the Desmond Bane haul.
Right.
So yeah, I don't like that we're in the abyss. I don't like that. Knock that off, Beasley.
I mean, I would say to be fair, I mean, I think Powell and Bane are very compatible as far as what, you know, what they do. Some would prefer Bane over Powell, but I remember Powell in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that.
No, he was a dog in Toronto. Yeah.
He got James Hardened. You know what I mean? You get caught in kind of how your team plays, right?
And they had, yeah, and that's not that also, you know, to be fair, what happens is in Toronto, that's your role. You're not exactly asked to be the stopper. In the Clippers, you have Kawhi, Chris Dunn, Zubac. Like, they have a lot of defenders there. Derek Jones Jr. So you take it easy a little bit on that end because you got to get 24 that night.
Right.
Take a break.
If one guy that can do that consistently, I'd be so happy.
Yeah, for sure. Take a break. Back after this.